Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Here's how you count to eight, three, two, one. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky. C-A-T-S, champs, champs.
Oh, it's a sea of blue. It's beautiful.
It's awesome.
Oh my gosh, they're crazy. They're the most dedicated fans I've ever seen.
Go Big Blue!
C-A-T-S-K-K-K!
Go Caster.
Let's go Cats!
Big Blue Nation, show your Wildcat pride and band together with the Podcats. All the UK propaganda you can handle.
Welcome into another edition of the Podcats. I'm Kenny Colston. Alongside me, as always, is Chris Littrell. Chris, give us a big hearty hello.
Hello, BBN.
There you go. I like that. You got to hit it. You got to hit it immediately.
I know.
It's kind of interesting, Chris. Talking about hitting it immediately, I kind of have an announcement to make. I've been talking with some advisors and some family members and mulling over my decision. And I'm going to come back to the Podcats for another year. I'm not ready to graduate to, like, I guess ESPN Radio or something like that. So I'd like to bring my talents back to Louisville.am, and I'd like to continue with the Podcats for another year. I don't know if you're still mulling your decision or have lost eligibility.
Didn't like the feedback I was getting, so yeah, I'm here.
So we're going to try to work on our game a little bit. Yeah, we're going to work on our games a little bit. So you're like a Jared Polson, is that what Derek Willis?
Oh, yeah, I'm a walk-on.
Yeah, a walk-on. That's funny. Well, here's our weekly PSA. Hey, go listen to other shows on Louisville.am. Go listen to Louisville Family Fun if you have kids. Listen to the Rusty Satellite if you like politics. Listen to us. And if you aren't listening to us on Stitcher Radio or iTunes, I'm not even going to give you the rest of the pitch because you already know what it is. And then we would like for you to go ahead and take care of that. Thank you.
And you know what else they could do is then listen to us with their headphones on while they're eating a delicious sandwich and having a cold beer at the O-Line Grill.
Yes, even better. People might look at you a little weird, like, dude, what's that dude doing with his phone or headphones in? But hey, you could do that, and we would support that.
Go over to him and say, hey, I'm listening to the Podcats, man.
Yeah, that's right. That was a fun time we had out there. They didn't ask us back yet, though, so that maybe we flirted with the waitresses too much.
Yeah.
I don't know. They liked it. Anyways, you know, I wanted to bring that announcement up because I think there's two main topics for this show, and the number one topic, obviously, is NBA draft decisions. The last time we had this show, we said that there were eight. I think we said seven, but some people put Marcus Lee in there. Chad Ford said that Marcus Lee could be drafted this year. And so we have four decisions from four of the eight. We're taping this on Tuesday instead of our normal Sunday, just programming note. So we've got Julius Randle. He's made his decision. Least surprising, I think, of everyone's, that the projected number five pick in the draft is going to go pro. So we have Julius Randle's pick. We have James Young pick. James Young didn't do a press conference, just kind of said, hey, guys, I'm out. See ya. Yeah. You know, thank you. Succeed and proceed, Julius Randle. Succeed and proceed, James Young. We knew about those. I think we talked about this last week. We knew about those. Another one that's not surprising, Marcus Lee announces that he's coming back for another year. I think I'd be shocked otherwise. So that we've got that out there on the table. And then one that I'm very shocked with and happened almost immediately after we finished our show, if I don't have my days mixed up, Willie Cauley-Stein coming back. Quite surprised at that one.
And happy about that. Very happy about that.
Oh, ecstatic about that. You got a guy that many thought was a one-and-done player and definitely was projected late or lottery this year, and all of a sudden he's coming back, wants to win a national championship as a junior, is talking about, in his quotes, is saying, I want to come back and work on my offensive game. I want to come back and get a ring. It was not, hey, I didn't like my NBA feedback, and I'm not going to go pro yet. It's, I want to be here. I want to win a championship. I didn't get to play this year, you know, in the tournament this year. I could have been a difference in the Final Four. I want to come back, work on my game, work on my offense, and win a title. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, likes where he's at, not in a hurry. Feels like, you know, his future is still ahead of him, and that's great. And what an embarrassment of riches at the big man position that UK is going to have next year.
Well, let's talk about that, because you're getting into a decision. Like I said, once again, in case I know people listen to us all during the week, saw a tweet from Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, before we got into the studio, that he says he believes Dakari will make his decision tomorrow, which would be Wednesday. Last week, my theory was, is that you wouldn't get both Willie and Dakari. I have no inside information. I've not talked to Dakari's parents or his family member or his mentor or anything like that. I still feel that way. I feel like you can't have four centers on the roster. I know people have talked about moving Marcus Lee to more of like a energy guy at the four position, but right now he's playing center. Four guys at center? Four? I mean, you've already got Poitras at the four, Trey Lyles. I think Willis technically plays the floor, four. You might be able to move Willis and Poitras, but four big guys. I think Dakari probably gets a late first round projection, and he does a Daniel Orton, and he goes.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, you know, and at first I was just kind of like, you know, Dakari, I just don't think he's ready. But then the more I started thinking about it, here's a guy that was starting at the end of the season. I just kind of wasn't thinking about that really. But I don't know. I mean, you're right. He's going to go in the bottom half of the first round based on his upside, his potential. And, you know, he's going to get paid. I'd love to see the kid come back. I like Dakari. I think he's got some room to improve. I think that, you know, in a perfect scenario, if he stays next year and then enters the draft in 2015, he probably gets picked in an earlier spot. But, you know, we have a log jam at the center position. And you know, there's no guarantee that Dakari is going to get the kind of minutes that he got this year, because from everything I'm hearing, Carl Towns is just the man, and he is skyrocketing up the rankings. I mean, everybody's already signed. Everybody knows where everybody's going, but there's a lot of people right now who are talking about Carl Towns being the top talent in this class.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was the Gatorade National Player of the Year. So, I mean, that they don't throw that around lightly. McDonald's All-American, I think. I mean, he was in the Jordan game, too. I mean, the guy has – and here's the thing about Carl Towns that a lot of these other guys can't say. I mean, yes, they play in AAU. They play against other elite talent. Carl Towns has been playing against grown-ass men for years on the Dominican Republic team.
Yeah, or whatever, yeah.
Because
exactly.
That's how Cal, I think, first got turned on to him, was the Dominican Republic team. And as a 15-year-old, he's on the team. He makes the team. Now, listen, the Dominicans, I believe, have never made it to the Olympics. I think Cal tried when he was going there. So it's not like this is like the world's best. Francisco Garcia plays on it. You've got some NBAers that play on that team. He's been playing with grown-ass men.
Right.
So I don't think there's going to be a wow factor of, oh my gosh, look at, you know, there might be. It's Kentucky. But if I'm Carl Towns, I'm not afraid of anyone. And so I would love for Dakari to come back. I would love to. But a big guy needs to play 15 to 20 minutes a game,
yeah,
you know, to really have a good game, to get in a flow. And I don't see that. Dakari also is more of a – this is unfair to him because he can get up and down the floor. He just strikes me as more of a half-court guy, whereas Willie runs. I mean, Willie is as fast and as agile. He can beat a guard up and can guard a guard, you know. He can guard a two or a three on a defensive rotation. Dakari doesn't seem to have that step, which may be why Dakari may be a perfect NBA guy. Playing a half-court set, get the ball down low, hit a few moves. We've seen a few moves. Rebound, you know, 8 points and 8 rebounds a game. There you go, dude. Have a long NBA career. Would love to see him do that for Kentucky. I just can't wrap my head around it. And if he returns, you know, obviously I eat my words. I would love it. But I can't believe Willie's coming back to improve himself. You can't do that playing 10 minutes a game. You know what I'm 15 minutes a game. Anybody who's coming back, and maybe Carl Towns is not a one and done guy. Maybe he wants to be around for a while. He's still kind of raw, and he would be a Marcus Lee, you know, play some games early when they're blowouts, not see much of them at the end of the season. But everything I hear, everything I read, he's not that type of player. I mean, he's going to come in and he should be playing.
Did Towns reclassify?
I'm not entirely sure. That's a possibility.
Okay, I don't. Yeah, which would, you know, add to the possibility that he might want to be a 2-year player. I kind of doubt it, but for some reason, I was thinking perhaps he did.
Well, usually,
maybe he didn't.
Yeah, usually you reclassify to get for a better situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's too many bigs, and you reclassify.
Yeah.
Up a year, or you reclassify down a year, although you usually don't get a down year this late in the game, but you can reclassify up a year, graduate school early, and it's usually for like playing time or to higher ranking in your class, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that is an interesting position. I think if all we had was if we lose Dakari, and I don't want to, but I'm okay with Willie coming back if he can stay healthy, which I think that may play a factor into his NBA stuff too. I mean, you look at Nerlens, he dropped kind of far in the draft, hasn't played a single second in the NBA.
Right.
I don't know if Willie couldn't go through workouts, if kind of a serious injury and go through training camp, you know, they might not have taken it. We don't know how bad the injury is, but he is apparently has a scooter and he's getting around. So whether that's for comfort or because, you know, he wants to, who knows? But
yeah, he's a quirky guy.
I think the next three decisions, and you can kind of group two of them in one, are the most important.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to save the 2-for-1 for last, but Alex Poythress is apparently seriously considering going pro, and part of his concern is, now this is all rumors, we haven't heard from the player, is playing time. You know, that is the latest rumor to come out. He's worried that he won't get enough playing time, which tells me Poythress would play the 4, not the 3, because Kentucky currently has no designated 3 guy. Devin Booker's a 2. Trey Lyles is a 4, I believe. Maybe Willis as a shooter, like Luke Hancock-ish. That's what I would envision him as. And I thought Poythress could easily move to the 3. I think that's what he'll play in the NBA at like 6'7", 6'8". But maybe not. So apparently there's a concern for playing time, which that tells me he's not going to play the 3 position in his mind. And that could lead him to a late-round draft because someone will draft him. I mean, you look at his body, you look at the flashes, and someone will say, well, I can just give Alex Poitras a good kick in the behind and he'll work out. And maybe they're right. But that's an interesting decision that Poitras is waiting this long to see what's going to happen.
I think it would be a terrible decision for him to go pro. Everything that I've seen in the past few days has him almost just falling off the map as far as interest from any NBA teams. You know, there's a lot of guys that are going to be in this draft. There's a lot of guys that are coming out early. There's always a lot of guys that you've never even heard of, some guys from overseas, you know, whatnot. With some guys that you never even paid any attention to all season, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, Paul George for the Pacers when he was drafted a few years ago, I think that really turned some heads. And as he turns out, you know, he's one of the top 10 players in the NBA. There's always some guys like that in every draft. Again, just based on the list of guys that are coming out early this year, I just don't see Poythress crack in the first round. And I think he's one of those guys that, you know, he might be sitting there around the 30th pick, 40th pick before his phone rings. I think it would be a bad choice for him to leave. I really do.
Well, you know, if you can get a guaranteed first round pick, because that's an NBA, the guaranteed contract. The second round,
I would
be
shocked.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that would be the baseline for me.
Sure.
Is some GM promising me that if their pick comes up at 25, 26, 27, then I'm not going to drop past that, which I don't know if you can take that to the bank, you know, a promise from a GM, but if someone made that promise to me, maybe I go. You know, maybe. It could just be that Poythress is waiting to see what everyone else is doing, you know, just being cautious. You know, this happens. I think everyone thought Terrence Jones was gone after 1 year. He came back. Poythress, you know, I think he drug it out a little bit last year. He came back. It could just be he wants to see what all the other players are going to do. He has till Sunday. That is the deadline. I think we need him back, and I would love to see him morph into like a very dominant 3, a wing position, a guy who cuts, who slashes, and let Devin Booker and some of the other guys be shooters, you know.
Right.
That's what I would like to see.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not his game.
Yeah, I would think, too, that Cal could see that, you know, and if in the NBA, Poitras would be more of a three, and surely he would be advising him that he could come back next year and work on, you know, his skills at the three. You know, that might not be good enough for Alex. Who knows? You know, and the one thing we talked about also is that apparently he's a great student and enjoys college. Mm-hmm. That will be a factor in his decision. I think he is being pressured by whoever it is in his inner circle. I know I've read some quotes from his father, and I just kind of get the impression that he's probably being told that he should go. But you know how that goes. Everyone else has their own agenda when it comes to something like that. So I'd hate to see him go. I think it would be a real mistake for the kid to go. I think he's got a lot of room to improve. He shows flashes of greatness. There's no doubt about it. In the tournament, he was spectacular for, you know, 15, 20 second bursts. But does that translate into, you know, being a professional? At this point, I don't think he's there. Just for his sake, not, you know, if he goes pro, this team, you know, we'll get along without him next year. I'm not worried about that, but for his sake, I genuinely believe that his best option would be to come back and get that degree, get that behind him, work on his game, and throw his name in the hat in a draft in 2015 that's just not as deep.
Right. Yeah, almost every top prospect and then some has declared for this draft so far. I mean, the lottery, I've seen multiple tweets from NBA guys that say, the people that are around the league that says, like, the lottery is set. You know, with Randall now announcing his decision, the lottery's pretty much set. You might get a few surprises, but the top 14 guys have declared, I think, in most guys' minds. Poitras is apparently can finish his degree in 3 years. That would be important. I view Poitras as Patrick Patterson. You know, he's about the same height, better build, you know, it just looks more muscular. Patterson, I think, was more hyped. I think he was more polished, but I don't think he had the athletic ability that Poitras has shown. You know, freshman year, Patterson was pretty good. Poitras was pretty good in stretches, but he would disappear. You know, Patterson took a leap from freshman to sophomore. He took an even bigger leap from sophomore to junior year. And I think if Poitras can return and make that Patterson-esque leap, Kentucky would be very strong. If he does not stay, well, just to be honest, there's probably a hole in the three position. Unless you can move like Lyles there, you know, unless you can just go really big. And that's up to Cal. That's his decision. But that, you know, there would be a question at the three spot. Maybe Willis, but I don't know. Maybe you go three guards. Probably depends on whether the twins return or not. And you can put like a Hawkins or your Booker in there at the three. Booker's probably the guy who can tween the most between a two or a three, you know, kind of like a James Young. But
what about an Aaron Harrison at the three?
I like him more at the two. I think his ball handling skills are okay enough.
Yeah, just out of a necessity
right
type situation, you know.
And really the way that the three in the 5 years we've seen Cal, the three is really more like you know, Kilt Gilchrist played a three. Sometimes you have a shooter like James
DeAndre
Young.
DeAndre Liggins type.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes you just have a long lockdown guy. So, you know, Wilcher kind of played the three. So Willis is more of that shooter, not a slasher. James Young could slash. We saw it at times with that dunk we saw, you know, in the year. That was amazing. But, you know, it would be interesting to see how they would play that. Booker could be like more of the shooter slasher. Poitras, I think, would be more of like a Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, be an energy guy, maybe score, you know, score when you're needed, be that athletic freak, but really lock down, rebound, play defense, and he could do it. I mean, I still maintain that the biggest key in the Louisville game was towards the end putting Poitras on Luke Hancock because
yes,
his
absolutely.
Extra length just absolutely shut down a guy who was killing. You put Hawkins on Russ Smith, a little guy on a little guy could stay in his face, and you put Poitras on Hancock because Hancock was just doing James Young dirty. I mean,
yeah, he, it made James Young look as bad as James Young looked all year. There's
right.
No doubt about that.
But you put a bigger physical guy who's got another inch or two on James Young, and Hancock was just flummoxed. So that's what I would like for. I mean, if you could get Gilchrist was like, what, 6'7", and Poizers is somewhere around 6'8 or 6'9". You can add two more inches there at the small forward position, the wing position, and a guy who commits himself. Poizers would be out of this world. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, and a lot of it comes down to, because as we talk about this, Poitras does seem like a great fit for the three. I think a lot of his problem is that maybe he just doesn't have the confidence. I mean, obviously, this is something that's been talked about all year long with him and last year as well. But Alex has to just, you know, get it in his head that he could come in next year and lock down that three position. It could be his.
Right. There are questions about his motor.
Start and get all the minutes.
Yeah, his confidence in his motor. I mean, he disappears, and you wonder why. But Cal talks – and I think that's why Cal talks him up so much. I think he's trying through the media to say, come on, kid, you're a beast, you're a beast, you're a beast. You know, I don't think Poitras really believes it 24/7.
Yeah, you know, and another thing about Poitras, and I've had this discussion with other people, and we were talking about him, you know, comparing him to Patrick Patterson. In high school, I think Patterson – played against a lot better competition. I know he did. I mean, you know, he was playing on ESPN against some of those other, you know, big time schools and stuff. And Poitras played in what, Clarksville, Tennessee, I think,
right,
is where he's from. I'm just not sure that Poitras had to compete real hard at high school in high school.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Chris. And so it's kind of interesting. One thing I want to talk about before we get to the last decision, and that's the Twins, is I want to say I think the reason why there's a lot of assumptions right now, a lot of confusion, is this arbitrary NCAA deadline and these new rules that they put in, I think, 3 or 4 years ago. It used to be a guy could, even after the national championship team, you would have these floods of guys putting their name into the draft, going to workouts, you know, doing the combine, all these things, and they could get real feedback on where they stood.
Yeah.
Now, the deadline is so close. The NBA's deadline is so close after that. There's pretty much not a combine anymore because the NCAA actually moved their deadline, which is a false deadline. It's totally bull. We talked about this last week. After we talked about this, I went back and looked, and it's a bull deadline. It's basically a couple days after the national championship game, the NCAA says that if you have officially entered your name into the NBA draft, you must withdraw it by that point to retain your college eligibility. And the way everyone gets around it is they just wait until they know for sure or not, and then they declare. So the deadline for the NBA is the 27th. This Sunday. But, you know, you used to be guys could actually go to workouts. NBA teams paid for them. They could, you know, as long as they didn't sign with an agent. Now all those rules have changed, and it's largely because the NCAA has changed them. You know, if you go to the workout now, you have to pay for it on your own. Well, how many guys can do that? How many guys want to do that? You know what I'm saying? Year after year, traveling to Sacramento, all these different – I mean, if you're in Kentucky – you know, how many teams are you can't have the scouts can't come to school anymore, to my knowledge. So it's really closed the process. And that's why it's unfair, because guys like Alex Poitras probably aren't getting real good advice, to be honest with you. They can't go work out against each other. They can't, you know, I hearken back to a story. There was a recent story, and I can't remember the publication that wrote it. I want to say it might have been the LA Times, but I'm not absolutely sure. It was a West Coast publication. Wrote about Boogie Cousins, about DeMarcus, and an anecdote that they had in there that shows how good DeMarcus was is that in the lead up to his draft, he did a one-on-one with Kevin Durant. I think they share the same agent, maybe. And some of my details are fuzzy on this, so I'm just going to make the main point, and please excuse me if I get something wrong. But pretty much, Kevin Durant, who's going to be the MVP this year and who's been a wonder kind ever since he entered the league, and DeMarcus Cousins do a one-on-one draft workout against each other. And the thing with, you know, the first – basically there's this matchup, and the first thing that happens is that Durant just takes Cousins off the dribble and just goes around him and slams it, which you would expect a guy like Kevin Durant to do to a big center, right? That's not a surprise. Here's the surprise. Cousins gets the ball back, does the exact same thing to Kevin Durant. This guy is 6'10", 280, and crosses up Kevin Durant and slams on him like he's a guard. You can't do that anymore.
Right, right. That's all you needed to know right there. You can go ahead and catch the next plane back to Lexington.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, no. Don't even catch it to Lexington. Stay wherever you're at. You're getting paid, Cousins. Yeah. Go back home, buy a house, whatever you want to do. Like, and so the story was is that's when everyone knew with Cousins that, like, he should go. Yeah, like, there's no question. Guys can't do that now. Guys, Poynters can't go one-on-one against Glenn Robinson and gauge himself. You know what I'm saying? The Twins can't go against that and figure it out. They can't go against other guards. You know, even Randall. The top five are set based on, you know, how they played. In a perfect world, and they may get a chance since these guys, but in a perfect world, Randall would go against Jabari Parker, you know, go in front of in with the number one, you know, draft pick on the line, or go against Andrew Wiggins and see how you do. Go one-on-one, because you didn't get to during the season. So, but you can't have that anymore, and that's wrong. Of all the things the NCAA is trying to fix and are talking about, the number one thing is they should revert those rules back. I think they should do that before they even switch it to a two-year. You have to be at least 20. Because it's absolutely ridiculous, the limitations that they're putting on their kids getting good information. It's ridiculous. So now to the moment we've all been waiting for. Andrew and Aaron Harrison.
What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah.
I think they stay. But I could go either way. I don't think anyone really knows. I don't think anyone knows. I don't think Chad Ford knows. These guys are tight-lipped. I mean, absolutely tightest-lipped family of all time.
Yeah.
But I think they stay. And I think for multiple reasons. One, I don't think they'll hear good things on their draft stock. Publicly, good things are not coming out on their draft stock. Haven't. Maybe they're first-round guys. I think maybe not. I think they could do better with another year. I know the plan all along was to come out and after 1 year, but plans change. Their dad said a couple weeks ago, hey, we're good financially. Don't worry about it. Like you said, the draft is not as stocked next year as it appears. Come back, have a really good year, and you could rocket right back up into the lottery like they were originally projected. They're not projected there now. And for that reason, I think they should stay. Absolutely think they should stay. That doesn't mean they will. But I think in terms of the Harrisons, I think they need another year to succeed before they proceed. Your thoughts, Chris? You feel that badly about the Harrison twins that you can't even speak. I understand completely. All right. Sorry. I think we lost you there for a minute, Chris. Either that or you were just so moved or so upset that the Harrison twins would even think about going pro that you were just speechless. I don't know which one it was, but I'd love to know what you think about the Harrison twins and their future plans.
I think that, again, their best decision would be to come back. I think a lot of what they're going through right now is that they did not expect themselves to be in this situation at the end of the year. You know, this time last year, I think they completely thought that they would be entering the draft. They had a plan to be here for 1 year and, you know, win a championship and move on. Having said that, you know, they didn't expect to be in this situation. Well, here's your options. Put your name in the hat or come back. So, you know, like we've talked about with Poitras, I don't think they're hearing what they want to hear. I think it's a painful decision for them. I really do. I think a lot of it has to do with maybe how they felt that they were treated by the fans this year. They did take the brunt of the criticism on this team, and rightfully so. I mean, these guys were, you know, painful to watch sometimes. I was saying it all year long. But I think they just kind of felt like they really went through the storm this year, and it might have been a little more intense than what they thought, and I think they feel a little bit humbled by the fact that they have to come back. Hopefully they'll realize that it is in their best interest, that the draft will be there for them the next year, and you know, this is their opportunity to come back and improve themselves and improve their draft stock. That's how it works. I do believe they'll come back. I think it would be a horrible decision for them to leave, just like with Alex Poitras. I think Alex would probably be more ready to play in the NBA right now than the Twins. I just don't see them being able to match up physically with some of the guards in the NBA. They're just not ready. They're not as quick. I think they get rattled, and they're just simply not ready. I think a return for one more year of school would be in their best interests, and that's just the bitter pill that I think that they and their family is going to have to swallow.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on most of that. You know, these guys should have seen with Ryan Harrow and how that went down, and even some of the heat that Marcus Teague took. I mean, as guards, as highly graded guards, you're going to take the heat in Cal's system if things aren't going right. You know, no one blames the center for running the dribble drive offense. Nobody. And so the thing is that I hope it's not a pride thing. I hope it's not an ego thing. But you never know. I mean, you absolutely don't know. I would love to have the Harrison twins back. I think if you have the Harrison twins back, you can pretty much, and I'll say pencil, I won't be that arrogant, but I think you can pencil Kentucky in as the preseason number one. Again, yeah. Its main rival will be Duke, which is pulling in a monster recruiting class. The good news is that Duke has been pulling in a monster recruiting class the last couple years, and they do nothing with their one-and-dones. Coach K does nothing with his one-and-dones. So,
and they lost the guy that really runs the show down there. Joe, I mean, he's really been the man in charge for the last few years down there.
Right, and I think what you're seeing now is, listen, Coach K is a Hall of Fame coach, don't get me wrong, but finally he's starting to lose some assistants. I mean, in the last couple of years, he's really starting to lose his assistants who have been staying for 3, 4, 5 years, and so I think that hurts as well. I mean, a good assistant is just as important as a good head coach. I mean, I honestly believe that. I mean, if having a good number two guy, watch what happens to Pitt now that they've lost Slice. I can't even say
Roars
the guy. Roars. There you go.
Yeah.
That
movie star.
Kentucky hasn't technically said that they've hired him yet, but Pitt says he's leaving and everyone says it's to Kentucky. So the guy's a great recruiter. Apparently a pretty good coach too, X's and O guys. Watch what happens to Pitt. Watch if they don't slide back a little bit in recruiting and a few other things. I mean, a good assistant is worth its weight in gold.
And you know, I've kind of fretted over that with our situation. I hate losing Orlando Antigua. I mean, he had to take that opportunity. You know, he's earned it, and you know, congratulations to him. I don't hold it against him for going out and becoming a head coach, but God, I loved him over there on the sidelines. I hate losing him. And today I'm also hearing that Kenny Payne is a front runner for the Southern Miss job now that Donnie Tindall has moved up to Knoxville. So, you know, those are a couple guys. Rod Strickland's going with Antigua down to South Florida. So there's going to be possibly some heavy turnover on the Kentucky bench as well. And I think we'll be okay. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, that was a good group that Cal had there working with him. And I hate to see him break up.
I absolutely agree. You know, I wish the best for these guys, obviously. I'd like for them to have opportunities. It does well for the program. It allows other up-and-coming assistants to want to coach under Cal. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
When you do that. Look at all these – a good coach has a good coaching tree, in my opinion. That not every good coach – you know, sometimes their assistants just don't pan out. Most good coaches have a good coaching tree. And so it's probably time for Cal to get one as well. I would hate to see Kenny Payne leave with Coach O leaving and Kenny Payne. You know, those two guys worked with the bigs. It would be unreal if we lost both of them. But you would probably get Tony Barbie because I think a lot of people thought he was going to come back to Cal staff anyways. If Kenny Payne does lose, I would rather not have that happen. But if it happens, it's fine. There's also a few ex-Kentucky players you could see out there that could come back, you know. I'm trying to think. Scott Paget, Wayne Turner.
McCarty's done some time. Wayne Turner.
So a lot of those guys, unfortunately, have been going through Patino's tree. I don't know if Cal would take them, but it's interesting. So let's just some top of the line predictions here on the last four that we've got waiting on. Because now we're, you know, just to recap, let's go one by one. Let's go with Dakari first. What do you think he announces tomorrow, Wednesday?
I wouldn't be surprised if he goes. I'm kind of leaning probably 60-40 right now that he declares.
Okay, I say he goes as well. So we're both saying Dakari goes. Alex Poythress, what's your prediction there?
Every sign points to him coming back. I think that bad advice is the only thing that he has to go on as far as entering the draft. There's no good reason for him to enter the draft. I don't see him in the guaranteed money picks at all. I don't see him in the first round at all. I think he comes back. I think he wants to come back. I think he's hearing a lot of chatter about going, but I think that if he makes the decision and stays true to himself, he's back.
I also think that he's back. And now the moment we've all been waiting for, your prediction on the Harrison Twins.
I think they come back. I don't think they like what they're hearing. I don't think they're first-round picks. I think the allure of being able to play one more year together and having the chance to win a national championship will be enough to bring them back to Lexington for one more year.
All right, here's where I'm going to go a little bit off script, because I believe they should come back, and I think that, you know, they probably will come back, but I'm going to say they declare. I say that they go. That was the plan all along, and they go. That's just I don't know. I don't have any inside information. You know, I just think come Friday or Saturday, we'll just put out a press release and the Harrison Twins are gone. That's my prediction.
Wouldn't shock me one bit.
I think they're really 50-50. I may be wrong. You can tell me I'm wrong next week. I'd be happy to be wrong on that. But something tells me they're gone.
You know, and I don't think they know right now. I really don't. I think it's going to just come down to, you know, today's the day. We got to make this decision today. And I mean, like, if you asked them right now, I just don't think they would even know what to do.
Probably not.
So,
want to switch topics really quickly. The spring game is this Saturday. Currently projecting 37,000 tickets already given out. Could break 40, which would be amazing. Because of renovations, I think they can only get like 47 in there. You know, because they're, you know, with the renovations of Commonwealth, you don't have your full 70,000. So they could be at what close to their capacity crowd for a spring game. Had 50,000 last year. I think 40,000 after a 2-10 season would be amazing. On the heels of that, or actually it was on the front of it, is the information that Jalen Whitlow, the, I guess, most veteran quarterback on the roster, will transfer. Just want to get your opinions on the Whitlow transfer, because I think that speaks that we haven't seen Barker, we haven't seen Phillips, we haven't seen Tolles in any scrimmage or practice game-like situation. So I think the fact that Whitlow is leaving, and Stoops came out and said that he thought it was because you know, he wanted him to move to wide receiver, what that means for the football team.
Well, I mean, as soon as I heard the news, the first thing I thought was Drew Barker must be looking really, really good, which, you know, is nothing but a good thing for UK football going forward. If your freshman quarterback coming in is looking good enough that your guy who was your main guy last year decides that, you know, he needs to move on, or that the head coach decided that he needed to, you know, do a position switch, I think it's a good thing. I think we all want to see this air raid offense, and I think that, you know, Drew Barker's the guy to run that offense. Jalen Whitlow isn't. We talked about that all last year. It was pretty evident. So, you know, good luck to the kid. I hate to see him go. I mean, I think he'd be a great – if Barker's that good, if Barker's the starter at this point, which, you know, I guess it's trending in that direction if Whitlow was asked to change positions. You know, he would have been a great backup to Drew Barker, there's no doubt, but hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do if you're Whitlow. But yeah, when I heard the news, like I said, Drew Barker must be the man.
Well, I you know, we've talked about this. I'm a little iffy on starting Barker as a true freshman in the SEC. You could really kill his confidence. But I don't think you can count out Patrick Tolles or Reese Phillips. You know, rumor has it that Phillips had actually gotten his way up to number two on the depth chart over Max Smith by the end of the year. They just didn't want to burn his red shirt. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Toles asked to be a redshirt last year to spend a year in the system, learn it, and he also worked with a private quarterback coach in the offseason and during his redshirt season. So I wouldn't be surprised. It could be Toles' year. You know, after all his hype and everything else, maybe he'll come on for a year or two. I don't know. But Barker, they say he doesn't act like a high school kid. He's very polished and everything else. I'm nervous of a true freshman succeeding in such a tough conference with a tough schedule. I mean, you could really, kid gets hurt, anything could happen. I'm very wary of that with Drew Barker. A year in the system could be nice, but maybe he doesn't need it. Maybe he is that good. I'm not sure. You know, my benchmark is Jameis Winston, the current Heisman Trophy holder. He needed a redshirt year. Johnny Manziel needed a redshirt year. Is Drew Barker better than any of those? That might be unfair. It could be unfair. They played on better teams with better setups, better resources, blah, blah, blah. Kentucky may not have that luxury, but that's my benchmark, whether it's fair or not. If Manziel couldn't, who was a Heisman Trophy winner, needed a redshirt year before he started playing, if Jameis Winston needed one, I don't know that. You can't tell me that Drew Barker doesn't. That's just where I stand on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I'd say that more than likely Drew Barker won't be the starter for game one. But, you know, the Whitlow decision, I don't know. It's just, you know, we have limited information about what he was thinking, about what Coach Stoops was telling him. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if, you know, Drew Barker, he's going to get some series at the beginning of the year to go out there and see what he can do. Wouldn't be surprised at all if by game three or four, Barker is the starter on this team out of necessity. You know, it's Florida State and Texas A&M, two different kind of programs. Like you said, if you got talent at UK, you're going to pull up.
Right. And you know, I actually hope that it's because Barker wins the job, not out of necessity. You know, there's no one better. You know, I'd like for it to be a positive. But that being said, some other things I want to touch on the spring game. I would like to see how amazing the defensive line can be. And I use that, you know, that's kind of already jumping to where I want them to be. Kentucky has the possibility, and I don't think this is unfair to say, the possibility to have the two best defensive ends in the SEC. It'll be really important on the guys who replace then in the middle to really clog up multiple blockers. Mr. Cobble and the other guy, he couldn't really do it. They might have taken up space, but they couldn't really get upfield and take space. The freer you can get Bud Dupree and Za'Darius Smith in one-on-one situations or free them up, the more nasty this team is going to be. I've also noticed in articles that apparently the team is blitzing a lot more in these spring practices. Would love to see that. Would love for Stoops to actually have the team to do that. So I want to see the strides on defense. And overall, I want to see how much we actually see an air raid offense this year. We didn't really get to see it last year. Of course, now they're saying all the wide receivers are banged up, so they're not sure. But I would like to see that. In lieu of that, you've got three really amazing running backs. Josh Clemens, JoJo Kemp, this Hurd guy from Nebraska. You know, I want to see the talent on the field. I don't care about the score or anything else. I just want to see good, hard plays. One team can beat the other team. They haven't even picked a format yet. One team can beat the other team 100-0. I don't care. I want to see talent, you know. If Drew Barker gets picked off, I want it to because the corner or the safety or whoever made a hell of a play, not because he threw a duck. You know what I'm saying? If it's a 68-yard run, I want it because he broke a few tackles. You know, that's what I want to see. I want to see talent, progression, and talent. Because otherwise, the spring game is nothing. It is nothing. It is a showcase. Sure, they go hard. It's fun. But you can't take – I think the leading receiver in last year's spring game barely even caught a pass. I can't even remember his name. I thought he was badass at the spring game, and we never even saw him again.
Yeah.
So, I
know you're talking about, and I can't think of his name either.
And that tells you how much he matters.
Was it Chris Matthews?
No, that it was a wide receiver a long time ago, MSNBC host, you know. But it's some Legree or something like that. Maybe AJ Legree. I remember. He's inconsequential. We don't care about him anymore. So I want to see our name guys do well, make some plays, let, you know, let them hit. Let Bud Dupree, I don't know if they'll let him hit the quarterbacks, but, I mean, wrap him up and carry him 10 yards and make him feel real bad about it. Whatever you want to do, I just get out there and play. I'm excited for it. I think Kentucky has talent. They don't have enough talent to compete in the SEC. Let's get that out of the way. They're not too deep at every position. They're not even – the only three deep they might be at is running back. And so, you know, they're not there yet, but I'd like to see some progression from last year and air it out a little – air it out and blitz. That's all I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, this is just going to be an opportunity for some guys to go out and play in front of a large crowd in a more of a game-type situation than they've been in so far and see how they perform in those situations. You know, it's this team is still very much a work in progress coming off the back-to-back 2-10 seasons and, you know, maybe a 4-8 season this year is realistic. So, you know, coming in the spring game, you're just going to see some guys able to get out on the field in front of a crowd and, you know, showcase their talents and let the coaching staff see where they're at. Yeah, we're not going to – even if someone has a great game, how much can you take from that, you know? So right. It's just an opportunity for some guys to get out there and knock heads a little bit and let the fans, you know, get a little gauge of what we're going to have coming into the year.
By the way, I would take a 4-8 season. Let me go on the record here in April. I would take a 4-8 season in yeah. football. I would love it.
Remember how optimistic we were at the beginning of last year? We were 6-6 going to a bowl.
We were suckers. We were suckers. Absolute suckers. I think people tuned us out. They tuned us out after that. We had to win them back. Oh, my gosh. I'll take 4-8. I'll take it. Chris, anything else you want to touch on briefly before we wrap it up here this week?
Just some stuff going on this week. Some SEC basketball, a little turnover in the coaching ranks. Tennessee hires their 15th, their 20th choice. Donnie Tindall is going to be the new head coach down in Knoxville. That's, you know, going to be playing down there on Pat Summit Court. That's a girls' basketball school. Obviously, Bruce Pearl at Auburn, that hire made a while back. Frank Haith is out at Missouri, takes the Tulsa job. So there's one that's opened up. So, you know, a little upheaval in the SEC basketball ranks. Hard time. Those schools having a hard time finding somebody that wants to be their head coach.
Well, I mean, when you know you have to play Kentucky and Florida, and that's they're established at the top, you know, it'd be hard. I actually think Tindall will succeed at Tennessee. I don't know how quickly he can, but, you know, he did great things at Moorhead. Did pretty well at Southern Miss as well. So I think he could eventually return Tennessee to that third spot in the SEC and make them competitive like they were under Pearl. I don't know if Pearl can succeed at Auburn or not. I mean, it's Auburn basketball.
I think he will.
Well, he won't be there long enough to have sustained success. I mean, but he might give him a year or two, but I don't think he'll be there that long to give him sustained success. And poor Missouri. I really thought Missouri wasn't a bad basketball school, you know, when they joined the SEC, have really fallen off. I don't know why. Maybe they can grab a local guy, really knock it out of the park, but how far they have fallen.
Yeah, I think the Haith hire was an absolutely horrible hire in the first place. He was, you know, one step ahead of the pink slip down there anyway, I think. He was probably a year away from getting shit canned. And so Tulsa's going to regret hiring him anyway. I just don't like the guy, his antics. I think he's, you know, he's kind of mouthy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a school right there. They need to hit a home run. They've got kind of a proud basketball tradition, whether it's warranted or unwarranted. They've never really done much. They've been a fairly consistent program, you know, they're kind of like an IU, just, you know, win 22 games and it's a real, real successful season for them.
You know, make a Sweet 16 once every like 4, 5, 10 years. And
yeah, exactly. But they're at the point now where they really need to hit the home run and hire the right guy. I hear they will just be in obscurity for the foreseeable future.
I think you're absolutely right. Well, good show this week. Appreciate you for coming on. I think we'll have a lot more to talk about next week. We'll have the spring game. We'll have the remaining decisions of the four freshmen. Well, Porzingis is not a freshman, but anyways, we'll have more NBA draft decisions. I don't think our slow shows have come up just yet, but we'll get there probably, I don't know, somewhere in July. But good show this week. Appreciate you coming on, Chris.
Thanks.
Let's end this as we always do. Go Cats.
Go Cats.